Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey there, and welcome back to Holding Space Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Cassidy Freitas. I think you know this about me, but in case you don't, I am a licensed marriage and family therapist, and I have a group practice based out of California where we offer virtual therapy to parents who reside in the state of California. Now, there came a point in time when, because of the podcasts and the connections I was making with listeners like you, as well as through social media, that my practice was full. I was seeing my ideal client and feeling really connected to the folks that I was supporting. And then more kept reaching out. And I had a wait list, but I didn't like having a wait list. I don't want people to have to wait to get the support that they're needing now. So I started to think about hiring a therapist, and it really needed to be someone that I could trust, someone that brought their own specialty and their own expertise to this work, and also took a similar approach and also specialized in working with parents and folks who were in those early years of parenting and postpartum. And that's where I met Casey. Casey was my first hire, and working with her, seeing how much her clients loved her, seeing the real support and change that her clients were experiencing, and feeling that deep sense of trust that when someone reached out to me, I knew wholeheartedly that if they connected with Casey and started to work with Casey, that they would be so supported and experience that real change that they were looking for in meeting their goals. And in today's episode, you get to meet Casey. So Casey really was what inspired me then to hire more therapists because of just how incredible she is. And in today's episode, you get to hear her story. Casey is a survivor of postpartum depression and anxiety herself. In this episode, she shares a little bit about that experience as well as the steps that she took to get support to heal so that then she could be the one offering the support. And she's also sharing with us how what she learned about herself during that period of time in terms of the kind of support she really needs translated later on when her child had a stroke and she now found herself being a parent to a child with a disability. She also shares a bit in this episode about how her partner needed much different support than she did and how they navigated that as well. I do want to share a trigger warning for this episode. If hearing about the depths of postpartum depression and anxiety, or hearing about in a child experiencing a medical emergency related to COVID, or just in general, I want you to really take a pause and check in with yourself if you feel ready to take in this conversation and Casey's story. Maybe it's not today. Maybe you need to take a step to get support first before you're ready to hear about someone else's story. And that's actually what we're talking about today, is really listening to yourself and identifying what it is that you're needing and then taking those really intentional steps to meet those needs. So I invite you to tune in to yourself right now before we continue with the episode, knowing that this is always a conversation and a story that you can come back to and connect with when you're ready. All right, let's dive in. You're listening to Holding Space Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Cassidy Freitas. I'm a mom to three and licensed marriage and family therapist. I'm really glad that you took the time to hold space for you by tuning in to today's episode. My hope with this podcast is to share conversations with experts from around the world and parents who've been through it so that maybe you feel a little less alone in your experiences and the messy side of being a parent and being a human, and so that you can walk away with supportive steps for what to do next. Listening to this episode is not a substitute for seeking support from a professional in your area. I believe that holding space and offering presence to both ourselves and others is truly one of the most meaningful ways that we can express care. And you are so deserving of that care. All right, are you ready? Let's dive in. Hi, Casey. Thank you so much for coming on today. I always enjoy any opportunity I get to spend extra time with you. And it's such a pleasure to have you come on the podcast. Thank you for coming.
Thank you for having me. I'm so happy to be here and to get to be in conversation with you.
So for the listener, Casey and I work together. And Casey, you were my first hire, the interviews and accepting applications to start my group practice. And the first person that, like, when I got off the interview, I was like, oh my gosh, I can do this. Like, I think I can hire someone. And I think I found her. And I was so excited. And it's just been, it's been such a joy to get to know you personally and also professionally, and get a chance to have someone that I can send clients to who reach out to me when I'm unable to see them, and to just have wholehearted trust that I'm sending them to someone that they are going to really love and really connect with and really feel supported by. And you brought that kind of sense of security to me that then allowed me to expand even more and hire the rest of our team. So thank you.
Well, that's so sweet. Thank you. And, you know, joining the practice has been such a joy for me. And I think just wanting to do this work, wanting to support moms and parents on their journey, and that's really the heart of the work that we do at the practice, has been just a dream come true, really.
And I actually had the opportunity to work with some of your clients when you took a leave. Mm-hmm. And we'll be talking a little bit about that today. But I just, you know, the story is complex and the story is hard. And one thing that I got to experience in all of that was getting to hear from your clients directly, which I don't often get to do in this group practice model, but to hear from them directly how meaningful the work is that you were doing with them and how much they missed you and we're happy to continue to receive support, but we're really missing you and, like, really wanting to know when you were coming back. So, you know, just, it was a really unique experience in that way to get to know directly from your clients how beautiful that work is you do. So maybe I'll give you here a chance to introduce yourself to the listener in your words and share a little bit with us what you're hoping to talk to us today about.
Yeah, so I am a marriage and family therapist in the practice. And I am also the mom of a very sweet and wild 2-year-old boy. And what Cassidy was kind of making reference to was that last July, my son had COVID and was incredibly ill. And several days after that diagnosis, we learned that he had had a stroke. He was 10 and a half months old at the time, and we ended up in the ER, which then resulted in being at Children's Hospital here in Los Angeles for about a month. And that time was split between, you know, inpatient care and then also inpatient rehab because of the type of stroke he had. He has a diagnosis of hemiplegia, which is like partial paralysis of the body. So his stroke was on the right side of his brain, which means he has left-sided weakness. And actually, the way that kind of the medical world works now with a stroke and diagnosis is that he also has a diagnosis of cerebral palsy because of that weakness. So my hope really today with you is to talk about kind of the journey of becoming and now being the parent of a child with a disability. And also just to hopefully share some information to those that are maybe in the support role of being there for a friend or family member who has a child with a disability, and how they can really show up for that parent or person, the caretaker.
And so grateful for your willingness to come in and talk about this now. And I know you're still in it, you know, and I just want to name that yeah. This isn't a conversation about, I have all the answers and
definitely not.
Yeah. This is a conversation to support, feeling less alone and connection mm-hmm. and naming things that aren't often named. And also for you as somebody who, you know, knows how to navigate accessing resources and knows a thing or two about support and boundaries and the mental load. And, you know, I think that those pieces are a part of your journey, right? And mm-hmm. also a part of what I think is going to be so meaningful for you to share with us today while you're still in the messy middle of it all.
Yes. And I'm glad you mentioned that, because by no means am I an expert in disability parenting. I'm, you know, a little over a year into yeah. this journey, and I, you know, learn so much really every day. And that's something I'm sure we'll get into is really the work that you have to do doesn't stop. It's ongoing and it's constantly evolving. And yeah, I'm learning as I go, and that can be a difficult piece of it at times too, because there's no guidebook on how to parent in this way. Yeah. And so it's really about trying to find information and make connections, and it takes a lot of work.
Yeah. Yes. And I know that part of your story that you've shared as well in different ways with me, and also, you know, on the website, on your bio, and different things that you've written, that you are also a survivor of postpartum struggles.
Yes.
And so I actually wonder if kind of going back a little bit to sharing, you know, hardship is not something that is brand new to you, right? In this realm of parenting and finding support and finding ways to process and heal and experience. And so the reason I kind of wanted to start there is for the listener who maybe chose to tune in, maybe there's some folks who are already in the messy middle of mm-hmm. parenting a child with disability, or maybe there's somebody who has the worry or the concern or the mm-hmm. I'm wondering, or we haven't gotten a diagnosis yet, or mm-hmm. this is something that I have intrusive thoughts around, right? Like, there were things that you did before your child's diagnosis
mm-hmm.
to find support and to find healing for yourself. And I wonder if maybe naming some of those things first as part of your story could be helpful to the listener, no matter what stage they're at.
Yes, definitely. Yeah. And it's interesting to reflect back on, because I think I thought that struggle that I had initially postpartum was kind of going to be maybe one of the more challenging things I faced as a parent. And little did I know that this other massive challenge was coming along. But that initial challenge, I think, taught me a lot about the type of support that I need. And by that, I mean, so yes, as Dr. Cassidy mentioned, I had pretty severe postpartum anxiety and postpartum depression. And part of that was just that I have a history of anxiety. And so there was that history there. And then also I had severe preeclampsia during labor. And just some other kind of events in the hospital that just left me shaken up and really not feeling confident when I went home.
Yeah.
And so I think it was so helpful that I myself am a therapist, because I could easily say, I don't feel well. And I think what I'm experiencing is postpartum depression and postpartum anxiety. And even though I knew that, it didn't change the fact that I felt so alone in that. Because I think everywhere I looked, whether it be social media or friends that were having babies around the same time, they weren't struggling. You know, they were dealing with the normal difficulties, but it didn't seem to be as extreme as what I was feeling. So I really needed to hear from other people who had gone through it. I needed to know that I wasn't alone. And I also really needed to hear that it would be okay one day, that I would feel better, because it felt so permanent in those early days. You know, you're sitting in like a dark nursery, your baby's crying, and I was just wondering, when am I ever going to feel better? So, you know, I think I was lucky that I could recognize that in myself, that I needed that connection. And I went about getting that two ways. One was just kind of reaching out to some friends, and saying like, hey, do you guys know anyone that's gone through this? And colleagues too. And I was lucky enough to be put in contact with other moms who, I think when you've gone through this, you want to help other people who are going through it. And so people were so generous to me and talked to me over the phone or over text and shared their stories and really emphasized, like, you will feel better, you will get better. And shared also the things that had helped them, right? Which had been, some of them went on medication. I would say 99% of them were in therapy. And so those were things that I knew I needed to do for myself also.
Hey there, a quick word about this episode's sponsor, Cozy Earth. I have been a fan of Cozy Earth since I was postpartum. I am obsessed with their joggers and their pajamas. All of their material is responsibly sourced from viscose, from bamboo. It's so soft, so comfortable. It can transition from, you know, bedtime to the morning routine to school drop-off to, hey, I'm wearing it right now. I often wear my Cozy Earth while recording or while working. I am a huge fan. If you want to check out Cozy Earth, be sure to check out their website at cozyearth.com. Check out their joggers and their pajamas, and you can use code DrCassidy35 for 35% off site-wide. That's cozyearth.com, and that's code DrCassidy35.
And then the other thing was Postpartum Support International, which is such a wonderful resource. I went to some of their free support groups. And so, again, I was surrounded by other moms going through the same thing. And then now they have, you know, incredible things in place, like a hotline that you can call into to get immediate assistance and help. And also a peer mentor program, so you can get matched with someone who has walked this path and get support in that way. So having gone through that, I knew, okay, that's kind of what lifts me up, is other people's stories and hearing from other parents in the same position.
And really what I'm hearing from you in all this is, like, there's so many of the pieces that you named here are things that we talk about as folks who are in the maternal mental health field, and you actually walked through them. Like, you actually walked through the steps of really experiencing some of the really tricky parts of anxiety and depression to actually keep us from taking some of those steps to get support, right? Some of the shame, some of the hopelessness, some of the, oh, don't tell anyone because then X, Y, or Z will happen, right? Like, oof. But you like took the, some of the steps of just like putting one foot in front of the other, of like attending, you know, one of these free support resources through Postpartum Support International, reaching out to people, taking the meaningful risk of opening up about some of the things that you were experiencing, therapy, medication, and getting your head above water. And so as you're supporting folks through these things, you're also, you also can reflect back with them truly what it was to walk through those doors and take those steps yourself. And what a meaningful and incredibly powerful offering to be able to give to somebody when they're in the depths of that and in the hole, to be able to crawl into it with them and say, gosh, I've been down here. It's really hard. You're not alone.
Yes. And I hope that, you know, the individuals I work with can feel that it's really coming from a place of deep, deep understanding. You know, and my heart always swells when I hear from another parent that they're experiencing that, because I know how just intense it can feel in those early days. It's a lot.
Yeah, it is. Okay. So then, as you said, that was one of the hardest things you'd ever been through. And as you imagined, was going to be this, you know, it was this very hard entry into parenthood. Mm-hmm. And then within that first year, you had this huge and painful and scary experience with your son. Talk to us a little bit about what kind of the beginning stage of that looked like, right? You know, getting the diagnosis, adjusting to what your life is going to look like now, the mental load, you know, we talk a lot about the mental load and the challenges in getting support just in parenting in general, and then adding in finding yourself navigating the world of an experience of and the relationship of having a child with a disability. You know, there are all these new tabs open with the mental load. There are trickier things to navigate when it comes to getting support. And maybe you could talk to us a little bit about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, I think I have a unique experience within the community of disability. Well, and not unique, but, you know, in a way it's different than having your child come into this world and immediately there is a diagnosis, or, you know, within the first several months, you're noticing something is off and receiving that. And I have the experience of having 10 months of like a able-bodied, non-medically complex child. And what that was like, which felt hard and challenging and all of those things. And then, you know, really overnight, having a completely different kind of path through parenthood. And I think the thing that I have had the hardest time dealing with is the grief that comes from that, really grieving and not even really having realized just, wow, I had so many kind of preconceived ideas of what my child's life was going to look like, and how quickly that all changed, because, you know, of his disability. And then also there just were so many more kind of question marks about his future that arose that weren't there before. You know, will he need support at school? Will he need an aide with him? Will he be able to tie his shoes? you know, questions like that, that part of it is like over time we'll learn and adapt. But those were not things I had thought about prior to this experience. I will say, I really only recently have felt like a little bit of myself before this happened. And I do think that the version of myself that existed before this is no more. I think I'm forever changed, and not in a negative way. I think it has opened my eyes to a lot, and has definitely kind of allowed me access to another level of empathy that I didn't really know I had. But it's been a really hard process. You know, I think when you're in the hospital with your child, it's a very controlled environment, right? They're getting their vitals taken. There's someone always there checking on them. Even though you're super uncomfortable, you want to come home so badly. There's a sense of safety in being there. And you get really comfortable with that. And so coming home from the hospital, it's like you go from, you know, 0 to 100. It's like you're constantly being monitored to now no one is monitoring you. And that felt so scary and overwhelming to me. And once you get home, at least for my son and his diagnosis, it's like, okay, now this is when the real work starts. This is when he has to start his rehabilitation journey and start going to therapy. And so that opened up a whole other world that we had to navigate and figure out. You know, I didn't know about the programs that the state has for children with disabilities and what that process looks like. So really coming home was just about, like you were saying, trying to figure out what is our new routine, right? Like before it was like, what are we going to play with today? What are we going to, are we going to go to the grocery store? Are we going to go to the park? Now it was, okay, when is your physical therapy appointment? And we have to make an appointment with a, you know, a special eye doctor to make sure that his vision is working. And just everything that had been before was really no more. Like his entire kind of day-to-day had shifted and changed.
And I'm thinking about during that time with, you know, all the tabs that you had originally open, and then some of them, as you said, shifted and were no longer a priority. And then there's still obviously certain tabs, mental load, that mm-hmm. remain open to just continue functioning in the day to day. And now we're opening up so many more. How in the very beginning, how did you and your partner and your family system sort of navigate mm-hmm. that load? And maybe looking back, there are things you would change or things that you would share for the listener in terms of like, this would have been really helpful then, mm-hmm. or this, we did this and it was, or that here was a mistake that we made, right? Like looking back on that kind of transition to the new normal, what would you say in terms of like what would have been really supportive?
Well, I think first and foremost, like I had shared with kind of my journey through postpartum depression and postpartum anxiety, I was lucky enough when we were in the hospital to be connected with another stroke mom, and also with a mom of a child who had been through an accident and had a brain injury. And they really served like as my guides. And immediately it was kind of like an unspoken connection was formed between us because I had now entered this club, right? That I had never wanted to be a member of, but they held my hand without even, there was no hesitation. It was like, okay, what do you need to figure out? You need to find therapists. These are the therapists we know in your area. It was just like this whole kind of, this whole support system opened up to me. And, you know, now I would say those women and their children are like some of the most important people in my life, because they get it.
Yeah.
Like I can, you know, text at 6 a.m. or, you know, 6 p.m. and say, I'm struggling with this, or I need to find a new occupational therapist, and they have my back, and they know what to do. So I feel very lucky in that. And I so wish that every parent going through something like this could have that kind of connection with another parent who's been on that journey for a little bit of time. And, you know, I think some of the ways to do that, if you're a parent listening and you're like, I don't have anyone like that,
yeah,
this is going to sound maybe very silly, but Facebook is such an incredible connector for that. There are so many groups for, you know, rare genetic disorders to, you know, what I'm going through with my family. And people want to help. Like if you have gone through this, people want to be there for you who have walked the path.
Mm-hmm.
So I would really, really suggest trying to find other parents, or a community, a support group that is special to your child's needs.
Can I share something that comes up sometimes,
yeah,
with my clients and, when a diagnosis and this transition to this new normal enters their family life, is there can sometimes be this struggle of like, I actually like this like block, like I actually don't even like, I'm afraid to join these groups, for several reasons. And one of them maybe being this is almost like you said, this wasn't a club I ever wanted to join. And by going and making, mm-hmm, a connection, it's like accepting that. Right. And
yeah,
so there's that huge piece. And I think like there's a lot of grief, right, and pain that kind of swirls around with that block. And Facebook can be an incredible resource. And I think it can be really overwhelming, right? So
do
you have any suggestions for navigating the Facebook piece to make it like a more like nuanced, supportive, mm-hmm, experience? And any words you would share to the parent who's listening, who's just like, it's so hard to even take that first step to accept that, like, I am now part of this
yes,
crew of parents.
I will say that I think, just using this as an example, my husband, his grief journey and his process through all of this is the exact opposite of mine. So he does not want to be on Facebook reading about other children's journeys. That's not helpful to him.
Mm-hmm.
He's very much like, I'm with our son and I'm navigating this path, but hearing other people's stories is not how he heals. And that's fine. Like, I think he, you know, gathers strength from the present moment and from navigating that. I think, you know, part of it is being an anxious person is that I'm a planner by nature. And so part of, I think, my involvement in these groups and the relationships I've formed is about getting information, and that feels like power to me, right? That I can make decisions and choices based on that. I think for what you said, for maybe a parent that's like, this is too much, this is too intense, start small then, right? Like, see if there is a website with information about your child's diagnosis. Maybe it's not throwing yourself into Facebook, where there's, you know, tons of parents having conversations. Because I remember it probably took me about a month to do that. I first joined a pediatric stroke group. I saw a post about a child who was really struggling, and I immediately got scared, and I couldn't read it. It was just like, I can't have any kind of more, I couldn't have more negativity in my mind. It felt like what I was dealing with was already so hard. It was hard at that moment to hear another child's story who was struggling.
Right.
I think if you start small, if you start with your, you know, whatever the condition might be, if there is a, like I said, a website or a nonprofit that has been formed around that, most likely whoever is on the back end of that is going to be able to offer support and connect you. So for example, again, just because I know the most about the pediatric stroke world, there is an alliance for parents, and I reached out and I was able to chat with another mom over email. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of a very gentle way to build connection. Mm-hmm. You know, and maybe just even going on that website is the first step, right? Maybe it's like slow kind of dipping your toes into getting that support if that's all that you can handle.
When I got pregnant with my first, all of a sudden I was so much more aware of what I was ingesting, whether it was the food I was eating or the vitamins or the supplements I was taking. I really wanted to prioritize pure and high quality ingredients. And that same mindset has stuck with me, especially when it comes to omega-3. It is so important to support our heart, brain, and eye health, but we need to be aware of contamination in fish, such as heavy metals or dioxins. That's why I highly recommend Puri's O3 Ultra Pure Fish Oil. I got the chance to meet the founder of Puri and hear all about their full transparency that comes with all of their products. Each batch is third-party tested for things like heavy metals and pesticides. But don't just take my word for it, because with Puri, you can find the actual data behind every batch with a QR code that comes on the bottle. Right now, Puri is offering my listeners 20% off their O3 Ultra Pure Fish Oil and all of their other great product. Go to my special URL, puri.com/Dr. Cassidy, and use my promo code Dr. Cassidy. This even applies to the already discounted subscriptions. You'll get almost a third off the price. So go to puri.com/drcassidy. Don't wait. Use promo code Dr. Cassidy at puri.com/Dr. Cassidy. Yeah. Yeah. And so there's a what I'm hearing a lot of is sort of an honoring of where you're at while also moving towards the like meaningful discomfort, right? Of dipping our toes in and making those connections, knowing that at the end of the day, feeling less alone in that space is going to be supportive. And that doesn't have to look like you join these groups and you are involved in these really high level ways, right? Like, or really, you know, massive ways. Maybe it's one person that you find, like you share, like now these people are some of the most important people in your lives. Mm-hmm. And maybe, you know, and actually let me ask, you know, for your partner, you know, and for somebody who for them it's more about the presence with their mm-hmm. child mm-hmm. every day, and I imagine also with like the people who are in the system that are caring for the child, what are some ways in which you see him feeling not alone in the experience, right? Mm-hmm. Like what are some of those ways in which he receives support?
Mm-hmm. I would say I think he get support from his friends who have able-bodied children. And you know, that's something that I want to speak to is honoring and acknowledging how difficult it can be to, at least for me, to be around friends and family who have able-bodied children. after my son's stroke, that was not a place that I could get strength or support. It felt incredibly hard. Going to the playground felt like torture.
Yeah.
You know, seeing a kid being able to run across the playground or use both of their hands and arms, which my son really only has function of one of his hands and arms, was really, really difficult. And so I think for him and his different experience that he's having with grief, that hasn't been as challenging for him. And so, you know, he is still able to connect with friends of his who had children. And then also, I really think so much of his kind of strength comes from seeing our son and him have these major wins in his therapy. Mm-hmm. You know, him being able to go upstairs, him being able to bring his left hand forward, reach for something. Those are such powerful moments for him that I think really, and for me too, really help him kind of continue moving forward on this journey. That can just be so, so tough.
What I'm really gathering from what you're sharing here is that the access to support and the process of healing doesn't have to look like one model. And I wonder also if, you know, the two of you in the different approaches and histories and maybe in strengths that you bring to this experience, can actually be influential to each other, you know, I wonder, you know, if his, you know, comfort in receiving support from his friends with able-bodied children, and if his presence to really notice the little nuance of the wins is supportive, it can bring something. It can be difficult, probably, because it's not. Maybe that's challenging, right, for you. But if that brings something. That you're able to receive from him as well. And on the flip side, if how invested you are in these communities and learning more, right? Like has brought a lot to your family, right? In terms of access to resources and information that you would have otherwise not known. Right. And so there, I think it's because I imagine these can be really tricky situations too. I just think of different times where my husband and I have gone through something hard and we've coped with it differently. Mm-hmm. There have been times when those differences really created disconnect and distance between the two of us, and therapy, couples therapy brought us back, right? To kind of seeing some of these, being able to name some of these differences and actually connect through them. I really appreciate that you're naming here the differences but also the value in those differences, because it can be really hard in stressful situations. We can get that kind of tunnel vision where it's hard to see what they're doing as being helpful at all.
Definitely.
Potentially.
I heard some statistic a long time ago that parents of children with special needs, it's like 80% or something end up separating and divorcing, and I can see how that statistic, you know, makes sense, because it is so incredibly challenging. And like you're saying, having this shared experience but moving through it so differently at times has felt like we're on two different planets. And I think initially when we came home and my anxiety really kind of kicked into gear again when he came home from the hospital, that was really difficult to navigate, because my husband wasn't thinking, okay, when is the next bad thing going to happen and how do we prepare and plan for that? He was more thinking, okay, we're home. Like, what can I do now? How can I be present? And just an example I'll give of, I think, how we've now learned to kind of navigate both of our ways of processing and moving through this, is that we recently participated in a study. It was an occupational therapy study. And so I found it by like stalking the clinical trials website and researching. And so that's where my coping skills kicked in, right? Is like, I'm researching, I'm asking questions, I'm learning, I'm figuring it out. And then part of the study was that we had to ourselves as parents act as the therapist and administer the therapy to our child. Let me tell you, trying to get a two-year-old to do 2 hours of therapy in your home, that is not for the weak. And so that was where, though, my husband could step in and really be like, he's present. He's able to handle that kind of distress in a way that I can't. And he could navigate that. And so he owned that. And so I kind of managed more of the behind the scenes, and he was able to step in and really work with our son to participate in the study. So that, I think, is kind of how we've learned to navigate that, is just, we each have strengths when it comes to this, and identifying that with each other and really acknowledging it has been very helpful on this journey.
Thank you for sharing that like tangible example of how both of you brought something really important to that moment. And just for the listener, right? Like a lot of times it's hard to get there, and I've been there too. And I am a therapist, and like, we can't be the therapist for my relationship. Right. And so getting outside support, both individually and relationally, can be so supportive here. What would you say to the listener, and maybe we can kind of frame this in a way that this could be relevant to both the parent in terms of like, here's a way you can communicate what it is that you're needing support around, and for the person who loves somebody, right, who has a child with a disability, and how they can step into support. What would you say is like, you know, your top supportive advice here in terms of getting support and asking for support specifically, and then like being a loved one stepping in to offer it?
Yes, I think that support in general is, you know, can be so hard to ask for. And I think something that my husband and I implemented when I was having really severe postpartum anxiety was using this kind of rating scale to explain like how I was feeling in a given day. And so, you know, I said to him like, okay, the scale is like 0 to 10. 10 is the worst anxiety I could be experiencing. 0 is, I'm never at a 0. So I don't even know what I would say a 0 is. A 0 is, I'm on the beach, like I have a cocktail, and you know, all my worries are gone. But I would use that early on in postpartum and say like, I'm at a 7 today, or I'm at a 6 right now. And then my husband could say like, okay, how can I, you know, support you? What do you need? Maybe I needed to hear from him. Maybe I just needed a hug. But using that model through this journey has been really helpful, because he doesn't have anxiety like I do. And so rather than me kind of being super anxious and in my head and, you know, maybe shutting down, which is a lot of times what happens to me too when I'm anxious, I could say to him, hey, I'm at an 8 right now. And then that just opened the door for us to talk about what was happening. So I don't know, that for me has really been helpful, and a great way for us to kind of launch into like, okay, so now what do we need to do? And then I would say, you know, for him getting support, I've learned, you know, for him, having an influx of research or information is not helpful to him. And so rather than maybe flooding him with that information, it's like we have conversations about, okay, what's a cool park that we can try out with him? or what museum are we, you know, it's less about the stroke and the diagnosis with him. I think for, you know, family members or friends, being a parent of a child with a disability, you feel invisible a lot of the time. The world that we live in is, at least here in the area that I live in, is not set up for people who have a disability. And so I think that just adds to kind of like the experience of loneliness. And so I think first and foremost, letting that loved one know, like, you see how hard they are working at this. You see how they've been spending time at the doctor, spending time at the therapist. You acknowledge how much they've taken on. You know, I think really, really speaking that out loud to the parent of a child with a disability is incredibly meaningful. Because, you know, like you were saying about the mental load, that in itself with an able-bodied child is so much and so heavy. And when you add the layer of disability, not only do you carry the parenting mental load, but you are a therapist now. You are a doctor now. You are an advocate now for your child. And so you've layered on all these additional roles. And I really think just highlighting that feels so good to hear. Like, wow, my friend sees me. They see that this has been really hard. They see that I don't have the free time I used to have, or, you know, that I'm throwing myself into this world for the betterment of my child and for other children. And so really, like I said, just, I think calling that out, it means so much to hear that other people see you and see what you're doing.
I think at the end of the day, that's just such a core human need that we have from the very, very beginning, right? Is to be seen and to be believed, right? Mm-hmm. That, the things that I'm experiencing, right, like, are real, and to have someone who's close to us acknowledge that they see that, which then allows us to feel real and feel seen. And that's actually so much, it's such a powerful thing to experience that, and so empowering to then ask for more support in what we need. And so I love that that's your advice there, because I think that then it becomes a bridge to so much other, so many more ways in which we feel empowered to support ourselves and support our child that we love and are trying to show up for in all of these new ways, as you named. And I also love the quantifying of the anxiety. You know, it kind of reminds me of one of Brené Brown's supportive tips for couples. You know, she says it's never 50-50. So she kind of talks about, you know, and my husband and I do this, where like, on any particular day, you know, I'll share with him, hey, I'm operating at like a 20%, you know, and right. He's like, yeah, I'm at like a 40. And, you know, it's not 50-50 because it doesn't add up to 100. But like, you know, on those days, he might step in and take over like bath time, or he might be the one to put them down while I go like lay down in bed or something. And but I feel like when we quantify something, and you and I know this from the work that we both do with EMDR, there's a lot of kind of rating scales and numbers in there to kind of help track. But it also supports us in shifting a little bit then to a different part of our brain, right? Where we can put something to a number, helps us communicate kind of the internal experience. It pulls us out just a little bit out of the stress, out of that kind of like the emotional stress state to a different part of our brain. And then I think it gives the person we're communicating with kind of a reference point of where we're at. But then also it can be then kind of a realistic place to ask, to offer support, right? So if you're like, I'm at a six today, he might be able to say, well, you know, what can I do to help bring you to a five, you know? And it's like, it's, we're not asking him to fix it all, but it's at least opening up dialogue into what is one small way that we can begin to shift this, right? And also just for you yourself to be able to name it, I think is supportive.
Yes, definitely. Yeah, I think having that as a tool, it's kind of like a fast pass into just support, because I think the hardest, not the hardest, but one of the hard things about this experience has just been like, how quickly things change, how quickly you can be in a moment of grief and then immediately in a moment of joy. And needing to talk through that with your partner. And so this really just lets him know, you know, and now we have the experience of doing this for over a year, that it's a really nice way to open up a conversation. And it allows him too, like if he's experiencing something in that moment to share.
Casey, I so appreciate you coming on and sharing these parts of your story and just to be connected to you. And for those who are listening, are there any other specific resources that you'd want us to link to in the show notes for these parents? I will definitely include a link to, you know, your page on our website for folks who reside in California and are listening to you and they're like, oh my gosh, she gets it. I want to work with this. This is a therapist I'd want to work with. You know, we're accepting new clients and I'll be sure to include that link in the show notes. But any other resources that you'd want to share with the listener?
Yeah, I think, you know, I mentioned Postpartum Support International earlier, and they have a support group that meets twice a month for parents of children who, you know, have a medical diagnosis. And so I've attended a couple of those, and it's led by a mom whose child had a stroke, but that's not the main kind of diagnosis. It's people who are going through all kinds of different things. And it's not necessarily like a therapeutic group. It is more peer support. So anyone anywhere can join, which is really wonderful. You know, and then I think, like I said, seeing if your child's condition as a smaller organization that perhaps you could get information or support from. There's an incredible therapy center. They have a location in Los Angeles, but they have them in other places around the country called Napa Center. And they are just such a wonderful resource for getting information of any kind, whether it be like adaptive clothing or how to get supplies for your child's G-tube or feeding tube. They're kind of a hub for all of that. And I know they produced an incredible guide that has, you know, pretty much like every organization for genetic conditions or other kind of pediatric conditions. So they would be a great resource. And the other thing I want to say too is, you know, even if there's someone listening and we can't work together, you know, therapeutically, but you just want to, you know, talk to a mom that gets it, send me a DM. Let's just chat on Instagram. I get it. This is, you know, we're doing the impossible. And there have been so many days where I have wanted to run away. You just don't, you keep pushing through. And I know how heavy that can feel. So I just want parents out there to know I see you. And I am with you, and my heart goes out to you.
Casey, thank you so much. I will share links for these resources and points of contact in the show notes for the listener to head to. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me. It was so nice to talk about everything.
I hope you enjoyed that episode. If you did, you might want to hit that subscribe button to be the first to know when future episodes air. And go and explore some of those past episodes. Maybe there's a topic in there that you've really been wanting to learn more about. You can learn more about my private practice as well as my parenting courses and workshops at the link in the show notes. You held space for yourself today. You carved out the time and you tuned in to this episode. I hope you take a moment to honor how meaningful that is. Yes, to me for sure, but also for you. Thank you for tuning in, and I'll catch you next time.
Grand Canyon University, an affordable private Christian university, is one of the largest and fastest growing universities in the country, offering more than 270 programs online. In addition to federal grants and aid, GCU's online students received nearly $130 million in institutional scholarships in 2022. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu/myoffer to see the scholarships you may qualify for.